Welcome to the wrestling show that's not just for wrestling fans. This is Smark and Friends on lovewrestling.ca. My name is Zach and I'll be your host. We do a lot on this little show of ours. We do watch-alongs with uninitiated wrestling fans of a wrestling match. We'll speak to wrestlers about their projects outside of the squared circle, but it's been a while since we've reviewed a film or a TV show that has a wrestler or two in the cast, and that's exactly what we're doing today, because filmmaker Adi Shankar just dropped a new series on Netflix. It's called Guardians of Justice. It's a superhero series, and it's starring the master of the Diamond Cutter himself, Diamond Dallas Page. And joining me for this film review, this series review are two of the most positive forces of nature I've ever come across in the whole wrestling content and journalism sphere of the internet. I'm speaking to Ross W. Berman IV and Mr. Warren Hayes for a review of Guardians of Justice. Now, we're not pulling any punches regards to spoilers, so if you haven't seen the series yet, please head over to Netflix and enjoy it in full, because again, we're not pulling any punches, but if you don't mind a spoiler-filled review, please hang around, because we have a good laugh, but, you know, if you want to watch it first, please do so, then come on back to us. We also have a couple spoilers about Ghostbusters Afterlife as a bit of a sidebar at one point, so be aware of that too, I suppose. And the other thing I do want to let people know about is I want to give a bit of a content warning, because some of the subjects in the film are sensitive, including the one that does come up in this conversation, which is being self-harm. So please be advised before you go ahead and listen and or watch here on Smark and Friends on Love Wrestling. Now, before we get to our review, I want to thank the good people who make good things happen here at Love Wrestling, because support for Love Wrestling is brought to you by Manscaped.com, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming champions of the world. Manscaped just launched their fourth-generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. Now, join the over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with the precision engineering tools for their family jewels, and use it with our offer for you. Head over to manscaped.com, use our promo code LOVEWRESTLING, you're going to get 20% off your order, and no matter where you are in the world, you're going to get free shipping. How cool is that? Manscaped.com, promo code LOVEWRESTLING, your balls will thank you. We're back with Ross and Warren right after this message.
Hello, friends. Spencer Love here to interrupt your drive time commuter, your regularly scheduled podcast listen, to tell you about Love Wrestling, the brand new destination to find out more about what you love in the squared circle. We've got previews, reviews, breaking news, interviews, opinion pieces, features, and more, all under one convenient location. Head to lovewrestling.ca, youtube.com/lovewrestlingca, or your preferred podcast player of choice, because you want to check out what you love about pro wrestling.
And we are back. Joining me today is a pair of whom I consider all-stars of wrestling media and journalism. First from Chicago, co-host of Tama's Island and covering New Japan Pro Wrestling for WrestleZone.com, Ross W. Berman. How are you, friend?
You know, I can't complain. It's a beautiful, Wednesday here in Chicago. The sun is shining. How are you?
Yeah, it's one of the warmer days we've had in Montreal in recent days. Like, we've gotten +7, which is very nice.
I recently found out Montreal's an island. Are you on the island or are you off the island?
I'm technically off island, okay. But I lived on island for a considerable amount of time, and I'm barely off island, so I like to consider myself still part of the city.
I just learned that question, so I'm glad I got to bust it out.
Out of curiosity, was it Holden Albright who popped that up into your field of view?
I can't remember. It was someone on Twitter, so probably.
Okay, because I got together with Holden for coffee, and I said we're on the island, and it just like blew his mind, and I know he was tweeting about it. Now, further on, it's not often I get to have a host who I can call my neighbor to the north, but here we are, from Quebec City, host of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show, co-owner of BellToBells.com, Mr. Warren Hayes. How are you, friend?
I'm doing good, thank you very much. Yeah, there's no island life for me, unfortunately. But here's the thing, though, and thank you very much for having me, by the way, Zach, and it's a pleasure to finally do something with Ross. You know, we shitpost at each other more than enough. Finally have an opportunity to talk to each other.
I am perfectly sincere down here in the balmy southern region of Chicago, apparently. I guess I'm in the Key West of this group.
But here's the thing, because one of the most memorable exchanges that I've had with you, Ross, was my understanding of the geography of Chicago and its surrounding area, right?
Like, okay, Chicagoland, yeah.
As to what is Chicago exactly, Elgin, you know, and so on and so forth, right? So,
yep.
Now, Zach, you're bringing up, oh yeah, I'm from Montreal, but I'm off the island. Now, there's a lot of people who don't consider people off the island to be from Montreal.
I know.
I've been in Montreal enough. I've known plenty of people in Montreal to know if you're in Laval, pal, you're not from Montreal. And there's not a Montrealer who's going to claim you as being from Montreal either.
Now the listeners are getting a glimpse at my first tactic today, which is going to be stirring the shit so that way we don't have to talk about Guardians of Justice.
Well, we absolutely are, but it's going to take a little detour between the West Side Story that is the on and off island of Montreal, Quebec, Canada. But indeed, we are here to talk about the new Netflix series, Guardians of Justice, marketed as an Adi Shankar experience, starring Sharni Vinson, Derek Mears, and most notably, as it pertains to this pro wrestling show and podcast, Diamond Dallas Page. Now, when I brought it to your attention, did either of you, were you aware of this movie? Had you seen the trailer? Did you check the trailer out after I brought it to your attention? Warren, let me ask you first.
I had watched it.
Oh, you watched it already?
I had already watched it. I had binged it, like, you know, on the Saturday. It had popped up. Look, it had popped up in my my recommendations, I guess, you know, notification on the phone. There you go. And I was like, oh, okay, this looks corny, another superhero thing, right? But then I find out, oh, Diamond Dallas Page. And then I'm like, oh, wait,
Adi Shankar?
Shankar, there we go. Ari Shankar on top of that. So I'm like, oh, okay, so there's a lot of stuff going on here. Maybe I'll give it a go. Half-hour episodes, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, it's not that big a commitment. Next thing you know, I'm sitting there, and my eyes are bleeding because I cannot spare a second to look away. That's my experience with it. I just dove right in before being asked.
Ross, did you catch it? Did you have any expectations going in based on promotional materials or otherwise?
I did, because back in the day when Netflix used to have wrestling content on there, I used to watch some of those, like, because, like, they would put, like, the WWE DVDs on, like, Netflix. And so I would watch enough of them that the algorithm would always pop up. You know, I'd turn on Netflix to go watch Power of the Dog again, and they'd be like, hey, there's Diamond Dallas Page is in this, John Hannigan's in it, you might like it. So I'd seen the trailer, and then when you posited the idea of, hey, do you want to come review this, and you had mentioned that it's only half-hour episodes, I was like, well, if it's half-hour episodes, I can give it a go. And I'm actually glad that me and Warren are starting off on an area of agreement, because I also had blood in my eyes from this show. It hurt, it is a visual experience that we will talk about, I'm sure.
I did have a bit of an exchange with Adi Shankar on Twitter, saying that, like, yeah, this movie is a bit of a visual, I use the term like visual assault, and yeah, I'd certainly agree there. Now, again, Adi Shankar's body of work is pretty interesting. You know, he's producer of Dread. He ran, like, high-quality fan films, including that, like, Dark Power Rangers that went viral a few years ago, plus Punisher, Dirty Laundry, another fan film that actually had Thomas Jane reprising his role. Were either of you familiar with this? I know you said so, Warren, but Ross, have you...
Yeah, I'm aware of Shankar's work, because he's kind of a fascinating individual. He kind of reminds me of, if anyone is aware of the producers from their, like, the 70s and 80s, the Golan Globus production company, where they were mainly for, and I put this in it with no moral, you know, kind of weight on it. They were a cash grab company. They were the kind of company where, like, all right, this is popular, we got to do a superhero film. All right, musical's popular, we're going to do The Apple. We got to do, and it all culminated in them getting the rights to He-Man. They got to do the He-Man movie was Golan Globus. But they made just real easy, campy stuff. And that kind of reminds me of what Shankar's been doing on YouTube. I mean, he like you said, we've got Dread, we've got the Castlevania series that I believe he stamped his name on as well. Mm-hmm. Like, he he's very good at going, all right, what's popular right now? Let's try to jump on that. And I can't knock the hustle, especially if it, you know, leads to this kind of thing.
I am glad that you are available to be part of this panel, because, like, as much as you know about wrestling, I feel like the well runs equally deep with your knowledge for film. So thank you for bringing your perspective to this episode of Smarket Friends. Warren, what are your thoughts on the work of Adi Shankar?
Yeah, I'd seen the aforementioned Punisher fan film and I actually rewatched the Power/Ranger fan film just before we started, actually, just to be like, yeah, just, you know, reset and see, you know, see how far he's come, or is he, you know, how are things still maintaining? I mean, it was, you can understand everywhere he comes from in Guardians, essentially, comes from all his love for 90s pop culture, you know, things that were geared for children. You can absolutely see where all of this comes from when you start looking back at what he does. So, you know, I kind of feel like, well, I mean, maybe not go exactly. Maybe we're not going to start going exactly into the full series just yet. But, yeah. You know, his work is a product of his generation, right? Like, I think he is, you know, he's absolutely positively a, his output is absolutely an output of just color media, and then media on top of media on top of media on top of distribution and types of media as well. I think, you know, it's a kaleidoscope of everything he's ever liked. Right.
It's about consumption.
For better, for worse.
It's about, it's, oh, not, sure. I mean, it's not, because, like, you can say it's about media, but it's not about it. Yes, well, I think people can have, like, a personal connection to superhero films, especially because, like, I'm around Adi Shankar's age. I remember the superhero films and the superhero franchises we were raised on. They were toy commercials. They were about buy as many toys as you possibly can afford and then buy a few more because they're going to be collectors one day. And so it's not necessarily about, like, he doesn't connect with you on the level of, like, oh, I remember my first kiss. Oh, I remember the first time I ever, like, really saw a sunset. He connects with you on the, oh, I remember the time I got that action figure I liked. Mm-hmm. And that's what this was. It felt like kind of throwing a toy box at someone.
And smashing the action figures together.
And so that's why I'm sort of like, I don't know if it's about media. It's more about the consumption. It's more about the, I've got all this stuff. I have to play with it or else it's just going to sit here.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think there's that, but I think there's also a grown up part of it, because I think the marketing/propaganda aspect of it's like, how have your consumer habits, basically, that seemed so naive and chill when you were a kid, how essentially are they being used today to sort of maybe distract you from some real life stuff?
And that is the most groundbreaking thought of 1987 when they did Watchmen, and then they did Watchmen again. And now here we are doing a copy of a copy of a copy with Guardians.
Hey, listen, I've sat through three grittier Batman reboots in my lifetime, okay? Yep.
We have time for another Watchmen if there's a couple more dozen Batman films to be made, is what you're proposing?
Oh, sure. And more Alan Moore coming out to say, they can't do anything without my work anymore.
it's true. The Watchmen parallels are striking. A lot of similarities. It's a lot of similar characters to the DC universe. So, like, it's like the allegory of Watchmen. Like, well, not the allegory, but like you compare the Watchmen characters to DC characters. It's that, and like
it's like Rick and Morty Watchmen. Like, it's like if Rorschach was belching like a bunch during his narration, where he's like, oh, the city's full. Like, I think that's kind of the tone they've got striking with this.
Well, you know, in regards to Dallas Page, we're going to, as you bring up the narrator and the lead character, you know, Diamond Dallas Page was my guy in WCW. Like, that's the guy I was rooting for when I was a kid during the Monday Night Wars. But, like, there was a time I was falling out from wrestling, and then I caught the Devil's Rejects, and I was like, Is that DDP? And like, of all things I recognize him from, it was like the little star tattoo on his pec.
Unmistakable.
Unmistakable. And like anything else, like, you know, it could have been another Hollywood tough guy, certainly, but it was just that telltale star on the pec. Outside of wrestling, I'm going to ask my cat to get away from the microphone. Have you been familiar with DDP's work in film or any other television? Ross?
I'd seen Devil's Rejects, and I think he's very good in that. I am going to throw out a film title, and people are going to think I'm joking here, but I'm not. He's fantastic in Ready to Rumble, because in Ready to Rumble, he has to take the DDP character and make it a movie character. Mm-hmm. And I think he does that so seamlessly that you have to just kind of credit the performer, because the script isn't what got him there. It's not the directing that got him there. It's the fact that DDP knows who DDP is through and through, and that's one of the most important things a performer can be. Like, that was one thing I kind of was disappointed with. Is I felt like DDP was kind of sleepwalking through the, like, this. I wanted full DDP in this. I wanted Devil's Rejects DDP. And I think
Warren?
That was.
Oh, sorry, go ahead, Ross.
No. I was just buttoning.
Okay, Warren.
Well, as far as his filmography goes, yeah, I think it stops for me at Devil's Rejects. Because yeah, I do remember Ready to Rumble for better or worse, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think to go off on the point here where you're like, I wanted more DDP. I think just the way this was shot, you know, how the script was set up, I think it stunted it stunts performances. You know, if there's one major negative there, I think that's, you know, that's part of it. Other than that, no, I can't say I'm all that familiar with DDP's body of Hollywood work.
At least he hit a diamond cutter. Like, that's the takeaway here.
Mm-hmm. No, and
I popped for that, and I tweeted it, and Ari retweeted it. So he was vanity searching for DDP Guardians stuff.
Oh yeah, no, I'm sure he's looking for all of the keywords it just came out within the past couple weeks. And he comes from the YouTube world. That's a vanity searching world. And I'm not knocking it, by the way.
It's, No.
Everyone does it. Everyone with a capital EVERYONE. Like, seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. In regards to Dallas, he plays Nighthawk. He's a costumed vigilante, not a metahuman of any kind. He's investigating the apparent suicide and possible murder of Marvelous Man. Marvelous Man's otherworldly power has kept the world at peace and its power in check. With his death looms the threat of World War IV, for those keeping track in this film. His prime suspects, the Guardians of Justice themselves, Nighthawk's own cohorts and fellow heroes alongside Marvelous Man and himself. Like you mentioned, guys, it's a very Watchmen-like premise, but what did you think of the world building here, Warren?
I wasn't sure what to expect at first, and it just becomes wild really, really quickly, right? Because, you know, after the very, very public suicide, he assembles all the Guardians right in this one room. Then he's like, all right, so-and-so, there's cyborg T-Rexes taking over Syria, right, on this side. And then it just this absolutely wild thing. You're like, oh, okay, and this isn't even the worst. Like, it's not like, there's this... No, it's, yeah, it's like, by it's the
like,
way...
Like, remember that one Rick and Morty episode where the Statue of Liberty comes to life? And, like, that's just in the background the entire time. Yeah, that's...
happens, you know, kind of thing. Which, and then, like, in the same breath as he's pushing out the missions, you know, it's like there's the T-Rexes over here in Syria, and you're like, whoa! But then there's a landslide, I think, in Thailand, where it's like, we need people. Yep. Oh, okay, and that's very, you know, grounded. Oh, and there's a drug outbreak over, and it's, oh, okay. Like, I feel you got established very, very quickly. Like, on one hand, you have these fantastical elements, but then on the other side, there's something that's also very grounded and rooted. And I think it gets, and I think that's ultimately part of the trickery of the entire 8 episodes, is that despite all the wildness and the references and the superhero meta that exists, there's always this undercurrent of very, very real things that does actually, that comes full circle when you get to the actual ending, where you're like, the ending is extremely grounded in a certain way.
Too grounded, I think is a way to say it. Because, like, if we're talking about the world building of Guardians of Justice, because remember, Warren, how you were talking about how the multimedia or the mixed media presentation of it kind of got in the way of the performances? Mm-hmm. I think it really got in the way of the world building in that way that, like, you couldn't truly center what was the real world and what wasn't. Because I know that it's all supposed to be the real world, but you get the mm-hmm. animation in there, you get the 8-bit stuff in there, you get the all of it. It just starts to really, I think it wore on the way that they could build the world, because it led to, I think, things that they can't show you. You know what I mean? In that way that, like, when you're just kind of improv building a world, you're like, all right, and this, all of this stuff is happening. We don't need it to make sense. It can make sense later, somewhere down the line. And I think because that was so wild, when it gets to this kind of grounded ending, you're very much like, it's a whimper, you know?
Well, obviously he, you know, the main reason for him in using all these styles, of course, is budgetary, right? We know that, you know, and what a marvelous way for him to stretch a budget at the same time, because it you know, it's very, very adept. But I think these distractions are important, and I honestly think it's by design. The main purpose of them is to help distract you as the viewer, and I think it does it successfully, to distract you from the plot mm-hmm. and what Nighthawk is ultimately up to. I think you're supposed to feel your senses are being overtaken by all of these visuals and colors and.
I'm not knocking that part, but what I'm saying is outside of the, to borrow a wrestling term, outside of the kayfabe of that sensory assault, which is like the, sure. let's call the sensory assault, like what a wrestler would be doing in the ring and kicking someone's ass. You need someone on top of that, reining it all in. So that way the sensory assault, I think, can be used to greater effect.
But I think that's the point. I think that's the point. I think that's it. That's entirely it. So that everything that does happen that is like intrinsic, maybe a little more real, still seems fantastical, or you, mm-hmm. you don't need to be attached to it, or you're like, oh, this here. Oh, but look at over here, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, Warren, I'm actually glad you brought up the budgetary choices, because I had the same note. At first, I was like, you know, is this going to hinder the choices that the director might have otherwise made? But at the same time, like, the way that they just, like, they go all in on this. Like, they don't, like, it doesn't seem like they're sheepishly just throwing out some cartoons just to kind of, like, pad out the story that they couldn't afford to do completely in live action. This movie felt like, or excuse me, the series, like, it felt like it was completely unapologetic about using claymation, animation, 8-bit animation. It just went all in. And again, we call it an assault of the senses. And, like, in my case, I probably wouldn't have binged the series as I did had we not been reviewing it. I probably would have parsed it out a little bit. But I do admire that they just leaned into that choice myself.
I don't know if it was supposed to be spaced out, though, because, like, everything's a binge now, and I think something especially that's this sensory assaulting like this, I think this was supposed to be a content dump. I think you were supposed to kind of just go head first into, well, what did the 8 episodes turn into? Like, 3.5 hours, I think, was what I sat there for. Yeah, like, just go head first into 3.5 hours of this kind of madness. And I do agree with both of you. It's completely unapologetic. I'm just, as someone that, you know, I brought up the Golan Globus production company, as someone that loves historic trash, I'm supposed to like something with President Nick Nukem more than I did with this. You know what I mean? Like, that's such a great name. President Nukem, come on. Give me more to work with President Nukem. Give me more to work with Red
Talon.
And who has his own
theme song too on top of that.
Exactly. Yes. Like, it felt, I almost feel like the second season of this show is going to be so much better because they know what it is now, whereas this was just them being like, I don't know, what are the Guardians of Justice? What is this world? Let's figure it out. And then next season, we can actually have fun with Nick Nukem and his theme song. We can actually have fun with some of the stuff we set up this season.
I really like your analogy when you called it a content dump.
Yeah.
You know, because that's entirely what it feels like.
That's what everything is. Now we're at the point now where Bob Dylan will drop an entire every single take he recorded in a studio session, be like, "Here, that's the bootleg series. Take the open up and take the content." That's what everyone is doing now, and that's one thing that I think I do think Shankar understands, and I think he understands very well, is how to just kind of make you go open up. You just kind of go say ah, and here it comes.
We talked about, you just mentioned Nick Newcombe, and like this movie's got like some very interesting cameos riddled amongst their the performances. We've got Jane Seymour, we've got John Hennigan Morrison, we've got Adi Shankar himself, we've got RJ Mitty from Breaking Bad.
Hang on, you're missing the best one. As someone that grew lead. Up in the mid-2000s, Andy Milonakis is in this freaking show.
Okay, yep. And just screaming at the top of his lungs like Andy was.
Yep.
Hey, people, we're fucked. And then just spot that, on Milonakis.
That was the one moment where I was like, okay, they did get nostalgia for everyone, because even I'm here sitting here like 12 years old going, Andy Milonakis is back. Hell yeah.
Okay, admittedly, like he was a standout, but I don't have that frame of reference. What should I know him from?
Okay, if you grew up in America in the early 2000s, MTV was a cultural touchstone for a lot of us. You had stuff like Jackass, and from Jackass sprung stuff like Wild Boys, but also there was Andy Milonakis, who was this, I think in the mid-2000s he was about 20-something years old, maybe he was like 18, 19, but he looked 12. And so His whole thing is the Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla on The Man Show would like have him come on and pretend to be a Boy Scout and like just be terrible to people, just ask the worst stuff. And so his whole thing was like this 20-year-old that acts like the worst 12-year-old you've ever met. And for my generation of weird suburban burnouts, he is an important figure.
Okay, I've got the IMDb page and I've just found him, and I do recognize him from Waiting, but I don't have him like embedded in my cultural touchstone. Warren, are you familiar with Andy?
Yes. and he had a bit of a revival. I was really into. I was too old for MTV in the early 2000s. But Andy Milonakis and Wonder Chosen, that was my jam.
Yeah. Wait, was he in Wonder Chosen?
But he was of that generation.
He was all that thing.
It was that era of where comedy was supposed to be annoying. Remember the good old days when the whole point of comedy was just like yelling in a waiting room until someone told you to go home.
Which was invented by a Canadian named Tom Green.
Exactly. The Tom Green.
One of our finest exports.
unquestionably. But yeah, and Milonakis had a revival. I think he had a bit of a career revival thanks to Vine a couple of years ago.
Because he doesn't look 12, but he still looks young.
So but he's still a young dude.
Isn't that a condition? I think it's a condition, right?
And he's using it, man. Like Joe C. and Vern Troyer and everyone else. Who's that guy that's going to get the UFC fight? The little Khabib. Hezbollah. The little guy who shows up at all of the UFC fights and is like punching the big guys.
Okay,
he's getting a fight.
Yeah,
good for him.
Dana White, because there's another little guy that's like Hezbollah's size that they like keep getting in scraps at whenever they're in like the Saudi Arabia shows, and so they're gonna try and get those two to get in the cage.
Okay.
It's gonna make so much money. I'm gonna be there.
Oh yeah, good for them. Again, secure that bag. Absolutely.
Hezbollah Hive, stand up.
Another standout for me though has got to be John Morrison, the Red Talon. Again, it's very tacky. It's very like there's no subtlety in his performance. It's not. You know, Peacemaker. I haven't seen Peacemaker. I shouldn't be making comparisons to things I haven't seen.
No, it's very much not Peacemaker. With all respect to John Hennigan, it's not Peacemaker.
For sure. But I just saying, like, I have time for that character. If they want to, like, if we're talking about a second season of this show, if it's in the form of a Red Talon prequel where he's, like, constantly telling DDP to fuck off, I got time for that.
Did either of you see the movie that John Hennigan produced right before he went back to WWE, like Boone the Bounty Hunter, I think is what it was called?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he produced that? I didn't know that.
That was like one of his passion projects. Like, John, John Hennigan is like when I talk about the idea of kind of wasting a talented cast, he's one of the guys I'm talking about, because at the end of the day, John Hennigan's the kind of guy that if you really center a lot of this on specifically Nighthawk bouncing off of Red Talon, because I think DDP and John Hennigan just they have very natural chemistry. Man, you could really make something of this show, because like John Hennigan is a star, and he's got that, like I said, he produced Boone the Bounty Hunter. He's got that production mindset where he can help make it more than just content.
Because that's he was absolutely a scene stealer here.
Yep.
He was one of the only characters that had like a backstory that you could relate to. You know, where it's like, sure, it has the Batman tropes, but you know.
Whole thing's tropes. Like one of the strengths of this. It's all the whole thing is tropes.
But he took it to another level because he had this megalomania about you know himself when DDP Nighthawk starts feeding him. You know, it's like, well, you know, you could do this, and then he sees himself, you know, getting all the victories and the ticker tape parade and the statue stepping on top of the Nighthawk statue. You know, he gets all these ideas. I mean, that stuff was he literally had one of the characters where you had the most where you understood at least his motivations the most. So of course he had to die. Of course, it's like a goose situation, right? It's a Top Gun goose situation where you're like, okay, look, we'll give you all the reasons to really like this guy.
I didn't want to straight up say why they. I was trying to use waste in the pun term. They wasted it. They wasted a talent because like it's like Zach said, unless they go back to the prequel, that door is closed. And I guess technically,
or maybe he survived,
or maybe they resurrect him with some kind of Lazarus pit, because it's comic books and who gives a shit. But like, or who gives a shit? Fuck. But I tried to censor myself. I went worse. That's what you get with Russ W. Berman IV, baby. I feel like DDP, especially in that Nighthawk mode, did any of you see the Michael Keaton movie Birdman or The Inexplicable Virtue of Ignorance? Like, that's what DDP kind of reminded, like, it could have been that if someone had actually, you know, kind of brought the magical realism into it, and especially since the Nighthawk gear looked so much like that Birdman outfit from the movie.
It really did.
But, like, I feel like DDP really brought an intro, like I know I said he kind of sleptwalked, but it's an interesting energy. And then John Hennigan is you just put that camera in front of him and he can just go, you know, like they're they're your heavy hitters here. No disrespect to anyone else in the cast. Jane Seymour's very talented. RJ Mitty, I think, does a great job of just kind of like not subverting expectations, but like he finally gets to, I don't know, he gets to be RJ Mitty to me now instead of Walt Jr. And I think that's important for him.
What did you guys think of the use of the character of, I'm going to make sure I pronounce this right, Nosro Calcantor, the stock footage used of Orson Welles' Warren?
You know, when you told me that I was going to do this with Ross, the first thing that came to mind was the Orson Welles monologue at the end. That was the first thing that came to mind. I mean, do you want to talk about something completely unexpected? You know, why not? I thought it was a nice touch. If you did, look, it's one of these things where if you know, you know, if you don't, you don't, you know, do we call it an homage at this point in a, you know,
yes,
something which is essentially a pastiche, where it's an homage to everything.
It's an it is ultimately an homage to one of the greatest comic book movies of all time, Transformers the Movie, in which Orson Welles, in his final film role ever, well, technically his final film role, they then finally released Other Side of the Wind in 2018, but he did Other Side of the Wind in the 60s. So his final film role is as a giant planet. He is Omicron in Transformers the Movie. And so, like, I know you want me to be the film snob and be like, how dare they drag Orson Welles into this? But Orson Welles likes a paycheck, and I would assume his estate does too. And so I can't knock Orson Welles showing up in this. I think it was very classy. I respect the hustle, if nothing else. You know what I mean? I may not have.
I wasn't expecting it. To be fair, to be completely transparent, I wasn't expecting you to shit all over it and be like, "How dare they? Smash the good name,
Citizen
of
Kane,
Welles, you know."
The magnificent Ambersons, touch of evil. How dare? No, this is Orson Welles. This is the French champagne, Orson Welles. I get it.
It's certainly better, like in my estimation, to use like those stock footage clips or archived footage, as opposed to what they do in Hollywood now with like, you know, resurrecting Harold Ramis for the new Ghostbusters.
Exactly.
Oh, spoilers there, by the way.
No, it felt a million times more sincere, a million times more inventive than hell. Even Rogue One or any of the other ones where they've decided to CGI resurrect people. Like when I'm sure we're gonna get a CGI Alec Guinness at some point with all this Obi-Wan stuff. It's going to make me real sad, but it's inevitable.
I feel bad about, like, I feel like I should have went with Rogue One discussing, you know, posthumous CGI actors brought back. Warren, did I spoil anything for you?
No, not at all.
Nothing of merit.
Yeah, No. And it's a good time to be talking about this because we're a good 6 months to a year away from Marvel making a CGI death mask of William Hurt and just pretending that Colonel Ross is still in the Marvel universe. So like it is what it is, and I can't fight it anymore. I just hope it's as funny as that Jeff Garlin CGI that the Goldbergs did. If you're going to do the CGI, if you're going to do the CGI, give me something to laugh at, is what I'm saying.
This type of discussion reminds me of the colorization debates that we had in the late 80s and early 90s.
No, it's the same. No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Because colorization was just taking a film that already exists and adding color. This is like when they would get Humphrey Bogart to like do Tales from the Crypt or when they like when
Well,
they
wouldn't would, you love that? Wouldn't you love
No, it's weird and gross.
Bogey to be like and give you a bad pun.
It's the kind of thing that just feels like bad karma, all right? Like, I don't know. I'm not the most spiritual person in the world, but I feel like fucking with the dead in that way is the kind of thing that, like, gets you cursed. Like,
I'll tell you one thing.
Especially when you have them saying things they've never said before. Because with colorization, I'm not putting words in Gregory Peck's mouth when I make To Kill a Mockingbird into color.
No, but you're still usurping the vision of a director who had to compose with the limitations of being on black and white film, right? You're giving it an intent that probably wasn't there in the first place.
Yeah, well, for the directors, but I still maintain that it's less of a vandalism, because here's the thing. I think colorization of movies is vandalism. I think the CGI thing is like necromancy. It's like selling someone's dead uncle to a scientist so that he can make a skin suit out of it. It's like back in the old days when they'd be like, "Oh, we caught Big Nose George the cattle rustler. We're gonna turn his chest into a pair of shoes, and the governor of Wyoming's gonna wear it." It's just weird. It's just wrong. I don't know. It feels like that old world. It feels like the kind of thing that the old world would just really shake our heads at. It's dishonoring the dead, man.
Oh my. As viewers and listeners might have caught at this point, we're not going to try to summarize the plot of this movie, the series, more than we already have. That would be a rather Sisyphean task with the mile a minute frame, new measures
There's
of the story in each frame.
I will give them that. They put about 10 hours of story into 3 hours of television.
Yes.
Yeah, Warren and I were saying before we went on air, like, you know, you blink and you'll miss it. I wonder how much story I've missed in the glances I gave to my phone while consuming this.
It's like I was saying, like, when I started it up, I was like, you know, I was like, oh, well, I was preparing soup. I was making soup, you know. So I bring my cutting board and my vegetables into the living room. I sit down on the coffee table, pop it on, you know, and I got my chopping knife and, you know, and then. And you know, you watch a movie sometimes or a show, and sometimes you know you go like this, and you raise your head, and you do one of these. Like I'm putting my head down, and I have the impression that I'm losing out, that I've just missed some critical bit of information. You know, so soup was delayed.
I like how different our viewing experiences were. You're like, I was making soup, I was watching it, whereas I was like, I got a DM, I was given a mission. From an online friend of mine, I put my scholar cap on up in my ivory tower, and I sat down and I watched this bad boy.
Poured a little Merlot.
In the absolute cacophony of storytelling that was this experience, what were some of your favorite moments? Ross, I'm going to defer to you first.
I hate that it was so early into it, but it was just the introduction of Robo-Hitler or Cyber-Hitler or whatever.
Oh, God, right? Just
once they said, oh, World War III and Robot Hitler has been defeated, I'm like, I want to see that. Don't get me wrong, they came up with some interesting stuff down the line. Like I said, Red Talon was fascinating, but man, give me the whole World War III Robo-Hitler movie.
I like the depictions of world leaders throughout this entire
yes,
thing.
Okay, yeah.
Because they were like Nick Nukem in and about himself. It was like, you know, he was the most, international perception of America that is out there, right? He was fantastic. But then you have the Russian premier, who's with, you know, his two counselors who are two, like, you know, two hot Russian babes. And you're Dasha, you're Sasha. No, you were Sasha yesterday. Cut that, you know, it's like, that fantastic. And then you have, like, you know, probably, you know, the head of the president of Cuba, you know, who's sitting in the back and has his flag. And like, North Korea or China, I don't quite remember. But they all had, like, the hammer and sickle, right, in their flags, regardless of where it was. So... And they were all, like, itching. They all had their little mahogany box with the button, and they were all, like, hovering around it. Yes, can't wait to push this, you know? It's like, I thought it was fantastic. That was funny.
Maybe that was the other thing that was, like, it was just too Cold War for me. Because it was built on that the old mm-hmm. shows where it was the West versus Russia.
Nuclear threat.
Yeah, and sure. So that was, I think, one of the other things that aged it a bit for me, because I was like, man, if this came out like when Mystery Men came out, it would have been groundbreaking. But it's right now, and so
it's been done a bunch. Yeah,
yeah.
But I think the familiarity. Yep. Why can't I say the word
familiarity? Yes, I get you.
I think that's what, you know. I think it just helps push the plot along, you know, because it is really, it's closer of a, we're much closer to Watchmen than we are to Justice League, right? You know, in and about itself, you know, hell, even DDP without the mask, you know, looks like the comedian. So, I mean.
Mm. Oh my. You know, I was thinking how I really enjoyed this movie. I keep saying movie, it's a series.
Well, I mean, it's a 3 hour and a half film.
What is a movie anymore, man? Twin Peaks The Return is apparently a movie. Euphoria is made for the cinematic mind, man. Like, I think it's all just content now, man. It's just content.
Matt, I'm going to defer to both of you for your final thoughts on the film, but first I just want to say, like, again, I enjoyed the series. At first I thought it wasn't going to be something that I wanted to necessarily rewatch anytime soon, but this conversation has, you know, kind of gotten me reconsidering that. I definitely recommend it to, you know, people who like bonkers visual styles and can really just sit through a wealth of that in one sitting. Personally, again, I would not be able to do it through one sitting. I would need to space it out a little bit. But I guess I'm just different like that. Yeah. So, Ross, what did you think?
I just, like, look, I think you both make very good points about some of the stuff that did work about this, but I just can't get over the fact that in a world when I can watch anything at the tips of my fingers, there is just something a little kind of gas station action figure about the whole thing that makes me go, like, look, I guess if you've watched all of the superhero stuff out there, and then you're like, I've already also watched it all again, and I'm tired of there's no more superhero stuff for me to watch, then yeah, give this a crack. But otherwise, there is so much superhero stuff out there. There are so many comic book movies. There's so much, like, hell, the DC fucking tab on HBO Max has more Batman movies and animated shows than I knew ever existed in the first place, that I'm just like, I don't know. It's been done. Go outside. Touch some grass. Do we all really need 3 hours of this? This could have been a YouTube video for like 15 minutes, and I would have shared it to everyone. But because it's making me tell people to invest, because I am telling people to invest 3 hours of their lives in a world where it seems like daylight is getting less and less, nah, dude, go outside. There's more to life than this. That's my stance on it.
A fair stance, a fair stance. Warren, what's your final thoughts on Guardians of Justice?
I mean, you know, Ross is not wrong. You know, like, no, but it's he's right. Like, this, I don't think this is necessarily, like, a first-choice go-to series, you know? Honestly, I don't, because he's right. With the wealth of shows and films and music on top of that, like, anything, like, anything is literally right there. There's no reason to feel compelled to necessarily watch this, but I did anyway. Because this, it speaks to me, like, this type of environment, this type of universe that's created here, it speaks to me. I like the references. I like the fast-paced stuff. I like, I liked all the pastiches and the overlays, the heads-up displays from video games, the Mortal Kombat callbacks. I loved it all. I thought it was fantastic. I like what's done here, and it's the way, you know, I like the overall theme. Yeah. And maybe I'm overthinking it. And maybe Ari can say, no, you got it, pal!
Or it's maybe 80. It's 80 Shankar.
80, excuse me. And maybe, like, he'll say, maybe, you know, or maybe he'll say, you know, you're spot on. You know, the idea here is that the series is using, you know, marketing and flashiness to cover up propaganda, to distract you from what's real. That's ultimately it. Even in the fight scenes, you have the health bars and everything because everything looks like a video game because war is not real, right? Fighting is not real. There's no such thing as true murders because everyone respawns after a while, you know? That's the feeling, yet this, that's the feeling that you get despite the fact that everything that is happening is very real, that, you know, people do die, that it's actually quite gory, quite brutal. And I think this is where it succeeds. You're not pushed to think of the plot or overthink motivations. You feel like you're in something very, very lightweight because you're completely overwhelmed by information, by flashiness, heads up displays, video game references. You forget the bigger picture of it. And in the meantime, there are dark forces at work that are establishing their power while you're completely distracted by all the glitz and glamour and the cute stuff. I think it works.
There you have it. Warren, Ross, thank you so much for taking the time to talk Guardians of Justice with me. Again, I absolutely loved it, but I love talking to you guys about it all the much more. I'm going to leave the floor to you to let the audience know where to follow you on social media and anything you have coming up on the horizon. Warren?
Well, I have a podcast that I record every Thursday night. It's called the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. Talk about professional wrestling. It records live Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, over on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. So you can check that out. You can follow me as well. You can also listen to the podcast on your favorite podcast app on top of that. Follow me there or on Twitter at Mr. Warren Hayes.
Thank you very much, Warren. And Ross W. Berman IV, the floor is yours.
You can find me every Tuesday on twitch.tv/Thomas Island, where I record the Thomas Island podcast. We've been doing that for a long time now. We're very happy with it. If you want to subscribe to it, you can go to patreon.com/Thomas Island for all of your Thomas Island needs. You can find me online on Twitter at Ross W. Berman IV. I'm also on Letterboxd at Ross W. Berman IV if you want to see all of my film opinions, since I put a lot on the line here tonight. I got to put my money where my mouth is when it comes to the film stuff. Go see After Yang. It's fantastic. But you can also find me at Ross Berman IV on Instagram and rossberman.bandcamp for all of your folk, blues, and R&B needs. I got a new album coming out whenever I finish it. It's called I'm Your Lover Man. It's a gospel album. It's about preaching the gospel of peace, love, and fucking it all up.
Marvelous, friend. Guys, thank you so much once again. How do I get out of solo layout? There we go.
There you are.
There we go. Once again, thanks so much for your time, guys.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Additional support for Love Wrestling is brought to you by RK Athletics. If you're in the Edmonton area, Rich King is the person you want to speak to if you're ready to start chasing your fitness goals. Visit rkathletics.ca, check out the online resources that are available to you, and also check out that form at the end where he asks you, what are your fitness goals? And he's going to be able to help you start chasing them. And also, he's a very approachable guy, too, so if you just want to hit him up on Twitter or on Instagram at RKAthletics1, just send him a DM. Very approachable dude. Please feel encouraged to do so. Start chasing your dreams with RK Athletics. Thanks so much to Ross W. Berman IV and Mr. Warren Hayes for joining me for a review of Guardians of Justice. Once again, Guardians of Justice is available now playing on Netflix, so please check it out. Again, very polarizing film series. As you've heard from this review, but I really enjoyed it. I would definitely recommend this to people who enjoy superhero movies, who love just, wow, bombastic imagery, just crazy stuff, crazy animation styles all thrown into the mix. And again, DDP, can't go wrong with DDP. I recommend it. Hope you check it out. And please let me know what you think if you do. If you like what you heard today, please head over to ratethispodcast.com/lovewrestlingca. You're not going to be rating just Smark and Friends. You're going to be rating all the fine content that you should be checking out here on our platform. That includes Friend and Foe. That includes Power Out, Between Two Beards, Spencer Love interviews, all that good stuff. Please send us a word. It is much appreciated. You can also follow me on social media. That's going to be the next way. If that's the next thing, keep an ear to the ground for social media. But in the meantime, on social media, you can follow me on Twitter at SmarkMouth, on Instagram at Smark.Mouth, and you can follow the show on Facebook and on Twitter at Smark and Friends. And of course, you can follow at LoveWrestlingCA on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, and on TikTok. Thanks so much for joining us for our review of Guardians of Justice with Ross W. Berman IV and Mr. Warren Hayes. I'm going to be back next week. Till then, friends.